stay up here, and every once in a while we can kick it over. All right. I'll get this thing figured out.
Okay.
Thank you first.
Thank you. We are the Zurberg family, Kurt and Rochelle, and we have a picture of our children. As mentioned, our oldest, Kayla, she is a junior at Huntington University studying art education. And then Anna, our second, she is a freshman at Cedarville studying mechanical engineering. And then our two younger ones, Sierra, she's in seventh grade or finishing up seventh grade, playing flute and swimming. And then Eli, our youngest, and he loves any sport that he can play.
So we want to be careful not to assume that you know who we are. So introduce you to our family a little bit, and also to the past 16 years, we have been living and working and doing life and sharing Jesus with people in Russia and Ukraine. So let's see the next picture. What do I do? Oops. Okay. I think I pointed the correct way. So this way, right? Okay. Right at you? Okay. So this is a picture of our window in Odessa. We lived in Russia for our first 2 years for Russian language study and culture study. And then we moved to Odessa, Ukraine, and have been there for the last 14 years. And this is just a beautiful sunrise that our daughter Anna caught one morning. And then also we have to always include one more picture. Let's see. I think I'm doing it right. Okay. So this is the Black Sea. And the reason why it's only about 5 minutes from our house, and we always include this because the Black Sea is not black. It's actually a beautiful blue. It actually can be tropical at times if the sun's just right. They called it the Black Sea. Most likely, there's different theories. One of the theories is that it's so deep out in the middle, so it's really deep, dark, and black. But we've been pretty far out in the boats, too, and it's not black out there either, so it's just really beautiful. So, let's see. So, transition. So about 2 years ago, when things were going super, we've been through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears living overseas. A lot of hardships we could talk for days, not hours. And a lot of good things as well, too. And finally, we got to this point where the church is growing, people are growing, we're growing, life is good. And the Lord says, probably time to head back to the States now. And we're like, come again on that one? Because by this time, that wasn't very inviting. Ukraine was our home. You know, that we have family. That took a long time to build over there. And the Lord starts nudging this way, and we're like, what are you saying? So we didn't want to do that in a vacuum. We talked with a lot of our supporting church pastors and our church in Ukraine and prayed and prayed and waited and waited. And the Lord seemed to be in this. Well, we then walked with, we started blending our small church plant with another church plant during that time. And one of the ladies, this is Ludmila on the left, our teammate Amanda's on the right. And Ludmila, she just started to really blossom. She is just growing and serving and leading and just a pillar in this church together. And so it's really beautiful seeing that. Sort of like, I think maybe it's possible. We needed to just sort of move on and get out of the way. And she just started to really flourish. It's been really neat to see her grow and be a stable, not only person, but a stable faith, a stable love for the Lord that just goes on and gives and gives and gives. So.
This is a picture of Katya and her husband, Igor. And when we first met Katya, she was a young teen, strong on the outside, hurting on the inside, kind of grew up in a very dysfunctional family. And the Lord enabled us to get to know her through our daughter, Kayla. She'd come to our place kind of for a safe haven, a place of being able to feel, safe and loved. And over the, as we got to know Katya and share with her, she came to know the Lord. And now she finds, even though her life is not any easier, but she finds stability in the Lord and ability to continue forward. And she met a nice young man, Igor, and we were privileged to be able to be be able to be with them their first year of marriage, just to encourage them, because, well, they are opposites in personality, so just to encourage them to allow each other to be who they are. And we've just really are thankful to see that the Lord is raising up a new generation, and as she breaks some old generational sin patterns in her family and learns to knit with Igor and become a new family. And then this is a picture of Slavik and Yulia, and we met Slavik years ago as a young college student. He'd come in to be able to, I think, eat, because he was pretty thin at the time. But it was great to have him there. And he was an atheist at the time when we met him. And we prayed for him, and he kept coming back. And they had a long story. But anyway, in the end, he came to trust Jesus. And I remember thinking, if he comes to know the Lord, he's going to be a great young man, and he is. And he met his wife, Yulia, actually brought her to know the Lord, and now they are raising a new generation with their daughter, Lisa, and it's just a joy for them. And then this is Zhenya and his son, Nikita, and Zhenya is giving his wife, Yulia, a much-needed break. He also comes from a very hard life. During a time when Kurt was doing this plastic recycling program, he employed Zhenya, who was on the street at that time and homeless, and we got to watch the incredible story of how the Lord brought people that we didn't know at the time, but were part of also reaching out to people, and saw the community of a church bring Zhenya to come to know him. And he still walks a very challenging life, and he is trusting the Lord to walk this path, and it's just a great story, and they're expecting their second.
Sort of a fun thing to add too is that Katya's mom now is going to church. We would never have dreamed of that in years. That would have, and then also Slavik's older sister is now a believer, which we were like, we heard this news after being back in the States, and it's just really cool, because in lots of ways we felt like, oh no, we're leaving Ukraine. And then God reminds us that he's been there before us, and he's staying around. And that's really encouraging. Yeah. And also just wanna, it's easy when missionaries come and share these really cool stories, and there's a lot of hard stories in between. We left a lot of hard stories, a lot of broken marriages, a lot of people that heard about Jesus and are not choosing to follow him. So there's just a lot of difficulties that left as well. So we just continue to pray and trust that the Lord is going to continue to work in the lives of people in Ukraine. So
we are at a crossroad, and we returned as the Lord had commanded, or not commanded, asked, excuse my wording. And when we returned, we really didn't know what the Lord wanted us to do. He just said, return. So at that time, we returned and we set our face to say, okay, what's next? And the Lord had said, no, I need you to take a little time and reflect. I need you to take some time and process what all took place. And he graciously provided that opportunity for us. And as we began to reflect, walk through some of the rawness that was still left in our lives due to different circumstances, walk in leaning into some of the areas where we were like, Lord, we know you were there, but it was, where were you? Kind of one of those situations. We began, and as we prayed, we really saw a theme in our life over the last 16 years of how the Lord brought people into our lives kind of at a very low time, and they enabled us, they listened to us, they walked alongside us during that time. They didn't fix it, but they just pointed us to remember, to see where we were talking that the Lord was, but we just couldn't see it. And they enabled us to continue to not just survive, but to thrive. And we could thrive in continuing to trust the Lord. And we walked in faith during those difficult times, to walk with our family and trust them to the Lord, because our kids also had a lot of times that were challenging for them. And also just in at times as we interacted with people, not when we knew the outcome, but during the process of just continuing to hold fast to the faith that we had in the Lord and his workings. And in so doing, he showed us that there were he brought people into our lives for that, which brings us up to.
Yeah, so. That would have been perfect timing. I just didn't. There it is. Okay. So we're really sensing that the Lord is calling us to walk in a ministry of refreshing the hearts of those who serve. And it's a service to missionaries and pastors and leaders, both in the States and overseas. And it's this what it is it's a service that we received by being overseas and that we want to pass on. And so it's the blessing of coming alongside people and walking through hardships and allowing them to express themselves and listen to the Lord in the midst of that. And believe it or not, there's a lot of expectations that come in on missionaries and pastors that not everybody can, they can't talk to everybody. And so having some safe people to come alongside and talk is really powerful. It's coming alongside people, it's not when the wheels have fallen off. That's another thing to think about, is that to come alongside missionaries and pastors, just to walk with them in their longings to go deeper with the Lord. And so having a companion to walk in that is wonderful. Seeking to nurture spiritual vitality in the lives of missionaries and pastors. And what does this look like? It's meeting individually or in small groups, meeting online through Zoom, or West Michigan is a great hub for a lot of missionaries coming through on home assignment, or Chicago or Detroit. All those things are really close by, as well as traveling overseas again as the world starts to open up again. So traveling to Europe and Southeast Asia, South America, and those areas to be on site, because nothing is better than being face-to-face with people in that context. So this is not, sometimes people say it's like a support ministry, and that sort of makes people think like it's second tier leftover, well, we'll get to it if we can. And we say from personal experience of what we received, this is essential. This is not secondary. And so we really have a strong calling for that and in a sense of that. Where will we be? All over. So we're going to be based in West Michigan, but we're serving the greater mission community around the world. We're starting with our mission agency team, which is about 600 missionaries. And we also do partnerships with other mission agencies as well. With SEND, we have a close relationship with SEND, and then also Wycliffe. And there's actually, we have a meeting coming up in October with 12 different mission agencies that are talking around the area of spiritual vitality for missionaries. And this is a huge topic and a huge need. I'm starting to thump this thing. I think I believe this stuff. I actually do. So it's just we're really every day it seems like, or every week, one of us will say to the other, "Yes, this is where the Lord is leading." It's just a deep, deep sense of where He's leading. So we're still on support with team, and Grace is still supporting us, and we're thankful for that. And we're just really thankful for your partnership in all of this. I think it's your turn, right?
Sorry. No.
I just took your, That's did I okay. take your role?
That's okay.
Sorry. You can say it.
Yeah. So we do want to thank you. And we are going to share a little bit more, but in a slightly different fashion.
Yeah. Okay. So probably we can turn that off. That'd be good. So, you're going to sit up here. Wow. Okay. This is, you know what I like about Grace? This is going to sound sort of funny, but I get to preach to the choir. You know, I mean, everybody hears that phrase, but it's just, I like real choir, sort of fun. And I've walked past the timpani here going, I grew up playing those things in our church, and we had the robes and everything. I was just like, I said, Rochelle, this is like where I grew up in Detroit. This is really cool. So, sort of fun. Wanted to share a little bit from the Word today. So Psalm 145, if you could open there, that would be great. And today we're going to look together at the character of God in Psalm 145. And as an introduction, I want us to consider a few questions. Well, really one question. What comes to mind when you think about God? If you could draw an image or pick a picture that describes him, what would he look like? I'll give you a minute. I'm going to give you some time. So just think about that for a minute. What comes to mind when you think about God? So A.W. Tozer, in The Knowledge of the Holy, writes this: what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. The most pretentious fact about any man or woman is not that he at a given time, not what he at a given time may say or do, but what he in his deep heart conceives God to be like. So what is your image of God? What comes to mind when you think about him? Do you have a positive image come to mind, or possibly more negative? Or maybe some mixture in between? And did you like what you imagined? Were you drawn to this God? Or are you a bit concerned about this image? And maybe you find yourself with a positive image of God, yet still wonder why you might not be drawn to him. You're not alone, because this is actually more common than you might think. This is an important question to consider because, like it or not, this image will largely determine how we relate to God. A lady named Juanita Ryland, who works in a National Association of Christian Recovery, suggests that we all tend to carry around our own unique, personal, private image of God. And our private image of God can be different and in conflict with our intellectual and biblical conviction of who God is. This creates an internal conflict between our private image of God and our intellectual image of God, and that cannot be fun. These private images can be disturbing due to the conflict that it creates inside. Images about God are not the same as our ideas about God. Images are a combination of thoughts and feelings developed from experiences, usually in early childhood. We gain these emotionally filled images from parents or caretakers, from teachers, from coaches, from different people that form our basic expectations in all relationships, including in our relationship with God. So Juanita Ryan says, our images of God, therefore, may not be the same as our doctrinal affirmations about God. We may affirm that we believe in a God of love and grace, but our images of God may be of an abusive bully. And the image of God as an abusive bully is likely to have a more powerful impact on our emotions and behaviors than our doctrinal statements about God, because our images of God are rooted in early formative experiences. So I want to talk just for a minute. This is a little bit of a long introduction, but it's important, about six different common distortions of the image of God. The first one is that God's never satisfied. So I strive and strive and try harder and harder to please God, only to find out that, guess what? When I arrive, he raised the bar. It's always getting raised. I never can reach it. I never can please him enough. A second distortion would be that he's unsympathetic, cold, and distant. He's not interested in our problems. He's just way up there and a long ways away. A third one would be that he's too busy caring for the needs of the world to care for our petty little problems. That's mine. That's my distortion. It's easy for me, because I struggle with feeling insignificant enough for God to even care about my own concerns and needs. And this can lead to me feeling like a failure in my walk with him. I can spiral into self-criticism, knowing that God is good, and I am so messed up that he really doesn't have the time or even the care for meeting with me. That one's mine that I have to work on. The fourth one is that he's unreliable, maybe lovable today and angry and distant tomorrow, and he doesn't keep his promises. A fifth one is that he's weak and passive. He promises, but he can't provide or protect. And the sixth one is one who abandons, where we try so hard to please him and fear that he will never leave us someday. So what is your image of God? Maybe you've never thought about this at all, but this personal, private image of God is what will influence how we relate to him. Are you drawn to this God that comes to mind, or honestly repelled? To answer this, we need to look at our actions. Do our actions reveal that we place God at the top of our priorities and desires? Or is he simply one among many in a large list of sources for love, care, protection, fulfillment, and guidance? If many of us are honest with ourselves, we might be willing to admit that walking with God sounds inviting. Yet for some reason, we don't truly respond to his invitation to walk closely with him. Maybe we can agree that God is a loving God and we should walk with him closer. But in reality, it seems like he remains at a distance. At a distance. Or possibly maybe the other way around. We remain at a distance from him. We who follow the Lord can tell ourselves to try harder, read and memorize the Bible more often, pray more regularly, go to church as much as I can, join a small group, find an accountability partner. And maybe, just maybe, something will warm up between me and God. Or many of us can simply settle for something less than God and fill our time with busyness and empty distractions. While the activities that I mentioned above are good activities, minus the busyness and distractions, those are good activities for developing a relationship with God. But none of those really help if our image of God is distorted. I just want to unpack this in so many different ways, but I only have a short amount of time. If we imagine God to be anything other than the beautiful, loving God that he is, then no amount of effort will draw us closer to the Lord. Our image needs to change, not our effort level. You understand? Because if our image doesn't change and we ramp up our effort level, then it becomes a works-based salvation, even in reading our Bible and performing for him. You see that? That's what's underneath that. Often in a distorted image of God, we can slip into a mentality of simply using God. We can see God as only being a source of whatever we need. So we can look to God for things like protection, a sense of control, source of blessing, a giver of good life principles to live by, or even the one who gives us our life purpose. While God truly is the source of all these good things, God does bless us and give us good principles that guide our lives. He provides purpose, yet in going to God as a means to an end, we can miss the most important treasure of life, and that's God himself. Instead of seeking to use God, we can learn to treasure God himself. Psalm 63:3 says that your love is better than life. Or Psalm 37:4 says, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And as you dig into that, realizing that the deepest desires of our heart are really a desire to know him and be known by him. And also, we are never called to walk this journey alone. Finding somebody else who is safe to be with is important and helpful. These are people who allow you to be honest about your brokenness and allow God to heal you in his time. People who don't try to fix you, but rather are willing to walk with you together closer and more honest with Jesus as he does the fixing by his Spirit. So back to our image of God. When our image of God falls short of his true beauty and love, then we will not be drawn to him. If our image of God is toxic, then we will be left wondering why we can't get closer to God. Why, when I try harder, God only seems more distant. And possibly, we become content with simply knowing about God, yet not truly walking with him. We'll read our Bible, but it will just be an empty obligation. We'll pray, at times, and it will just feel like we're talking to the wall. Yet God calls us his beloved, his chosen ones, his bride, his children. And he wants to walk with us in a love relationship that's like no other. Now, I know that was a long introduction, but that warms us up for Psalm 145. Psalm 145 gives us a picture of our beautiful, loving God. And I wanted to dig into the reality of that in Psalm 145. Verses 1 and 2 say, I will exalt you, my God, the King. I will praise your name forever and ever. Every day I will praise you and extol your name forever and ever. Is this your experience of God? Now, before we think that David is this always upbeat, yippee-skippy guy, always yippee-skippy about God, we know that in many of his psalms, David is in agony, and he expresses his pain and his questions to God. It doesn't mean that he's lost his love for God at these moments. It means that when life is good and worth celebrating, and when life is hard and confusing, God is the first one David runs to, always, forever. Verse 3 says, great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. God's image is one of greatness. He is so great that we have no one to compare him to. He is beyond imagining. He blows our minds away as we try to comprehend who he is. Eli and I, a little while ago, had this really funny interaction. So, Dad, when did God start? Well, he doesn't have a beginning. Well, how do we get back to where he... How do we get back there? You can't get back there. Well, if you can't get back there, how do we... What? And we're just going around in circles, and then we just start getting frustrated and laughing, and all in between, we're like, whoa, I think that's a little of a picture of what it's like to see how amazing God is. We can't grasp fully who God is. He is amazing. Verse 4 says, one generation commends your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts. When we imagine God, we see him as one who does mighty acts. And these mighty acts are worthy of being passed down from generation to generation. He is still working mighty acts today, and he's still working many acts today as well. So what is the most recent story you have to tell? What has the Lord been teaching you lately? How has he encouraged you lately? How have you been experiencing him lately? These do not need to be stories of great grandeur for them to be told. Maybe simply a moment when he met you recently. Maybe he has provided for you in a special way. Maybe he's encouraged you recently. Let's tell these stories. And don't be afraid of those dark times when God seems distant. He is near, and we do not need to conjure up some great-sounding experience of him. Sometimes God asks us to simply walk with him in silence. He is there loving us in these times as well. Last year, when we were transitioning back from Ukraine, I struggled hard with God's silence. I was empty. I was empty of direction, empty of desire or passion, and this is rare for me. I simply felt gray. I wondered where God was in this darkness. And with one question, my friend helped me. He asked me, what was God's invitation to me during this time? This question shook me at first. It was uncomfortable. And yet God showed me how his silence was his way of calming me down, keeping me from distraction. And I'm really good at distraction. And drawing me closer to him simply to be with him and not perform for him. This might sound strange, but his silence became a gift in our relationship, a gift for me to grow deeper in his love, a gift to receive his love and grace simply because he loves me. Verse 5 says, they speak of the glorious splendor of your majesty, and I will meditate on your wonderful works. When we think of God, we know him to be a king. The word majesty has kingly wording to it. And not only a king, he is the King of Kings. If you're struggling to find a way to grasp this splendor or the majesty of God, then maybe try a walk in the woods, a time at the beach, or simply enjoy a few deep breaths, knowing that God is the creator, giver, and sustainer of everything. That tree is the sap carries water up the leaves and food down to the roots, the lake with the powerful waves, rushing wind, and peaceful sunsets. He holds it all together. And he holds us together. And this is God's splendor. And we can meditate on his wonderful works. What better spot to do it than in West Michigan? Psalm 104:24 says, how many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Verse 6 and 7 say, they tell of the power of your awesome works, and I will proclaim your great deeds. They celebrate your abundant goodness and joyfully sing of your righteousness. The most awesome of God's works is his ongoing work of redemption. His sacrifice and salvation are amazing, and we do not need to have a dramatic story for our story of following Jesus to be amazing. The amazing part of the story is him. The amazing part of the story is that we get to know him and walk with him, and love him, and be loved by him. God's work of redemption is awesome and worthy to be proclaimed. Is this who you imagine when you think about God? Verse 7 says that God is full of abundant goodness. It's a lot of goodness to go around. Maybe you're not seeing any of those great deeds or of his abundant goodness. Maybe it's time to lament a recent loss. Then do so. God is with you there. It's interesting to consider what comes to mind for each of us when we say the word worship. I'm venturing to guess that nobody would say lament would be their first word. Yet lament is a beautiful part of what God sees as worship. God loves you as you sing and praise and as you mourn and lament your losses. His goodness is also found as he walks with us in our difficulties and pain. Verse 8, the Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, and rich in love. This is who we are to imagine when we think about God. This is a beautiful description. He is gracious. He does not hover over us, waiting to punish us for our next mistake or our next failure. He is not eagerly waiting to show how much we don't ever measure up so that he can crush us to dust. Instead, God lovingly reveals to us our brokenness and complete need for him and draws us to himself. Often he uses struggles to accomplish the goal of drawing us closer. He does not delight in causing those struggles or causing harm. He delights in loving us. His banner over us is love. Imagine this God delighting in his people, aching when we ache, laughing when we laugh, enjoying when we are with him. Knowing him is what we are made for. He is our treasure. Verse 8 says he's compassionate. One of the greatest ways that we can gain a vision of God's grace and compassion is in Jesus. Look at how he interacts with people. He loves the unlovable. He eats with sinners. He hangs out with all sorts of people. He plays with children. He laughs. He cries. He cooks for his friends. He tells stories that help us begin to grasp the love of God. He speaks truth that can set us free if we receive it. I love the word for compassion in Russian. It's sostradanie, and it carries the idea of suffering together with, alongside of somebody, suffering together. It's beautiful. When we think of God, we think of his compassion. Verse 8 also says that he's slow to anger. He's patient. So what is your image of God? Do you see him as patient with you, especially when you mess up? Again, he's patient with you. Many of us struggle with patience for one reason or another. Often I can find myself in a hurry and not being patient, both with others and with myself. Because of this, I'm in danger of portraying this characteristic onto God. But it's not true. God is patient with us. He has time for us and is in no hurry. And he's rich in love, verse 8 says. He has tons of love to spare and go around. This is an unending love, a giving love, and there is always, always, always enough for you. So I'd love to keep going if you gave me another hour, but I'm not, so you can rest easy. At this point, I think it would be really good for Rochelle to share a little bit of a practical outworking and bringing to life these verses as well.
One morning, Kurt was talking about Psalm 145, and as a family, we've been working on meditating and memorizing Psalm 145, 8 and 9, and that morning, before he even asked me or was telling me about Psalm 145 and what he wanted to share, the Lord made verses 8 and 9 really rich to me. And so I'm going to share how the Lord put some flesh on these words. In the beginning, we just read verses 8 and 9, and I'm going to read also 13 because we worked on that one also. They read, "The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. The Lord is good to all, and his compassion is on all he has made." And 13, "The Lord is trustworthy in all he promises and faithful in all he does." Well, in the beginning, when we first read it, they were just words to us. Just words, maybe a little meaning, but basically words. And I love how the Lord, if you take time on a verse, over time, usually for me it's about a month of just kind of having them there and at times reading them, thinking upon them, all of a sudden the Lord will just open them up and make it so rich to my life. As we returned, the Lord provided this book called Returning Well, and I've been working through it because it provides questions that make you think about what different aspects of your life overseas were, whether it's on language or how you interacted with culture or just how you saw friends developing, different aspects. And one of the questions that the book had was, as you have worked, in one of these questions that I worked through, let's see if I can find the question. The question read, "What three words best describe the pace of life you had in your host culture?" And these three words, like, came to my mind pretty quickly. And as I'm going to share them, they're not, you'll think, well, they're not really a pace of life. I'm going to call them more seasons of life. But they do describe our life there. The three words that came to mind were tough, new life, and rich. The first word was tough. The first couple years of our life were really tough. We felt, or I did specifically, because I'm sharing from my life, I felt ripped and stripped. Ripped of language, ripped of culture, ripped of family, ripped of connection. I felt stripped of who I was. I felt stripped of knowledge of how things worked. I felt stripped of friends. I felt stripped of, I'm going to cry, surroundings, feelings of safety, and values that I grew up holding. They weren't held in this new culture. So as I was thinking, these memories flooded into me, the rawness of how I felt during those first years of being ripped and stripped really overwhelmed me. And as I just kind of allowed those feelings to be there, the Lord then brought the next pace or season of life, which is new life. All of a sudden, memories of being able to see green again, seeing a friendship forming, beginning to realize that I understood and I was understood by people. Beginning to see God's Spirit working in the lives of several people around me. Seeing new shoots of growth in people, kind of like spring. You have hope, you know, for spring, and there was new hope for me. Language, I began to see that language was bringing connections, was bringing a new family, was bringing new cultural understandings, bringing new feelings of safety, bringing of ways that I felt that I understood. And as I leaned into the depths of our years overseas, the third word came. It was seen, rich. And as I reflected on those last number of years that we were there, I saw just the amazing of God's bounty for us. In the places where I had felt so ripped and stripped, God had grown deep friends. He had grown deep love for where we were. He had grown values in us that were values there in Ukraine, and that enabled us to connect to people in their cultural ways of how they interacted. He worked joy and walking alongside new believers. The Lord nourished and really put our roots deep there in Ukraine and had grown a new family for us. So now I want to take how those three words that the Lord brought through that book, and as I leaned into that invitation to look into that time, and how then verses 8 and 9, as we began to memorize verse 8 and 9, and how these three words came together and brought richness. God's grace, God's compassion, his trustworthiness, and faithfulness were seen greatly. I think back and have so many stories of praises on my lips in the tough seasons of life overseas. I want to shed light of hope and richness in that, having looked back and sat in that rawness, you saw the tears coming in my mind, that rawness that I had enabled me to see that God was there with me in that. He didn't leave me there. I think I may have shared this with some of the ladies at one point years ago, but during that beginning time, in language school, I remember specifically just really being at, like, I don't think I can do this, Lord. I don't think I can endure the way that I have to adjust culture and language and not being understood. And the Lord's like, okay, Rochelle, right now you're feeling like you're protecting this blister. It was like having this, in human terms, this huge blister, and I was doing this because I didn't want to feel the hurt anymore. And he's like, remember, I'm the great physician, and you need to put that wound out so that I can heal it. I can put the ointment on it, and I can bring the healing to it. And so the Lord was compassionate. He felt my hurt. And he's like, I'm walking with you in this. And he did. And so I saw his compassion in a way that I hadn't seen it before. And then as I began to think about he's trustworthy in all his promises, I thought through his promises. I will be with you. I will protect you. I will be your strength. I will answer you. I will provide for you. I will give you peace. I will always love you. And as I thought through those, he was trustworthy in every one of those promises with us over those years that we were there. He was with us. He did protect us. I could tell you stories of how he protected us. He was my strength. I learned to speak Russian. He answered prayers when we prayed out for caring for our children. He provided for us to remain there. There were times when we thought, okay, we're going for this visa. If we're to be there, we're gonna get it. If we're not, we're gonna go home. And he provided. He gave us peace. Many stories of how he gave us peace. You can ask after for any of them, and I'd be glad to share them. And there are times when we question, Lord, do you love us? Are we really doing what you want? And as we leaned into that question, he's like, yes, I want you there. And so we saw his trustworthiness in that all he promises. And his faithfulness. He's faithful in all he does. Faithful is all over the scripture. And one other place is 2 Thessalonians 3:3. The Lord is faithful and will establish you and guard you from the evil one. And when I think back that how he guarded us is that, you know, there were a lot of things that we could have just said, Lord, forget it. We don't see you in this. But he protected our hearts that we did not give up that hope. And we continued to walk forward. And we continue even today. So the Lord has brought such richness in for me to see how he knitted Psalm verses 8 and 9 into the story of our life overseas those 16 years. And so I guess my question to you is, where do you see yourself in the journey? Are you in a rawness? Are you in a tough season? Possibly a season of new life with a sight of hope, entering the sight of richness or experiencing his faithfulness? I want to encourage you not to be afraid to look back. Sometimes we don't like to look back at all that hurt and pain, but if we will allow ourselves to look back, we'll see the Lord was there with us in it. And that he's gracious. He knows we live in a broken world and we live broken lives. And so in our brokenness, he's compassionate. He's present with us in our pains. He's slow to anger. He wants to restore us. He doesn't give up on us. We've seen that in our own lives and in the lives of many that we've walked alongside. But he's rich in love. Sometimes we are presently aware of it. Sometimes we're not. And his love does not change. Again, I emphasize that he's trustworthy in all he promises. And sometimes we don't see that. And we can ask him, Lord, you promised this. I've asked him that. Lord, your word promises that I'm still green and still producing food because I don't feel it. And then through time of wrestling, he shows that to us. So in taking the invitation from God to look back at rawness in my life, the Lord revealed how he was there holding me, enabling me to keep serving in the state of where my